This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, hide from language before language starts going on about owl theory again. This episode is about washing, not the kind that makes things clean, the kind that just covers over the dirt. But before that, glad tidings. The Allusionist Live Experience is coming to Australia in July. July 2022, that is next month at time of recording. So if you're in or near Canberra, Melbourne, Adelaide or Sydney, pop on your most secure mask and come to see me and houseband Martin Austwick perform a new show called Your Name Here. It's all about eponyms, full of facts and fun, and with some probably regrettable musical numbers. And there's a special Allusionist pencil included with every ticket. Also, some shows in Aotearoa New Zealand are looking likely in August, so keep an eye on theallusionist.org/events because ticket links will be up there very soon, or possibly already. But definitely very soon, given that the shows are very soon. This episode contains some swears. On with the show. For the first couple of hundred years of its existence, the word whitewash had a fairly simple time as a cheap paint daubed on walls and trees. But at some point in the 18th century, it gained this whole extra life as a metaphor to mean covering up sordid, dubious, or downright evil things. And once you've got a good metaphor going, why not grab half of it and use it in new metaphors to speed along the process of people getting to grips with those? For example, one coined in 1986, greenwashing, when companies try to make themselves look like they're not melting the world by committing to some tokenistically environmental scheme that lets them continue treating the world like their own personal fondue set. Then there's redwashing, political organisations and companies feigning a social conscience for their own reputational or economic benefit. That can also be known as bluewashing. Purple washing, meanwhile, same effect but using feminism. Whitewashing again, casting white actors to play characters who are canonically people of colour. Pinkwashing, probably coined in 2002 by Breast Cancer Action, who define it as a company or organisation that claims to care about breast cancer by promoting a pink ribbon product, but at the same time produces, manufactures and or sells products containing chemicals that are linked to the disease. Just a few years later, pinkwashing had another meaning too.
I'm Sarah Shulman. I'm a writer in New York City.
When did you first come across the term pinkwashing?
It comes from Arab people and people involved with Palestine. I first heard it from Ali Abu Nima, who is a Palestinian leader who is the publisher of Electronic Intifada. But they were talking about Israel pretending that they are this ecological marvel and they were greenwashing. And he said, oh my God, they're whitewashing, they're greenwashing, now they're pinkwashing.
Sarah Shulman didn't coin this sense of pinkwashing, but she did introduce it to a whole new audience when she used it in 2011 in a piece she wrote in the New York Times. This is how she used pinkwashing in it.
It's when the Israeli state uses the fact that gay people have some kind of visibility in places like Tel Aviv to claim that that means that they are a progressive state and that therefore any kind of opposition to the occupation or brutality against Palestinians or the suppression of Palestinians is unjust because they are clearly progressive because they have some gay rights. That's their argument. So basically, they are equating certain kinds of gay visibility with modernity itself. And that is no longer the case. There would have been a time when that would have been true, but that is no longer true. So pinkwashing is a lie, right? It's a marketing device. But it's not just the West that is subjected to pinkwashing. Palestinians themselves are subjected to pinkwashing. So a Palestinian queer person might be exposed to pinkwashing ideas and believe somehow that they can't have a life as a queer person in a Palestinian context, when actually there is a Palestinian queer movement and there is a community that is evolving. They have really had very deep conversations about how Israeli pinkwashing affects Palestinian people and affects Palestinian gay people and queer people and alienates them from their own communities and makes them feel like Israel could be their savior, you know, while they're being occupied. So they've really been talking about the psychological consequences on them of those propaganda campaigns.
From this political sense, pinkwashing evolved a bit more to mean companies commodifying gayness and gay rights while not helping out.
That would be a watered-down meaning. That would actually be pinkwashing, the actual meaning of pinkwashing.
A paler pink.
Right. If people want to use it, let's try to also remind people that the original example has to do with Israeli occupation.
Now, in our current era, corporate pinkwashing has evolved towards rainbow washing. Not because a company has figured out how to redwash, pinkwash, purplewash, bluewash, and greenwash all at once, though maybe some have, but because they're putting rainbows on products for Pride Month to signal how friendly they are to the full array of sexualities and gender identities, and even more friendly to making money.
My name is Mitra Kaboli, and I'm the producer and host of a brand new podcast called Welcome to Provincetown. It's coming out June 15th, and I'd love for you to listen. I would define rainbow washing as the corporate phenomenon of putting rainbow flags on everything during the month of June, which is Pride Month, and like corporate pride collections, corporations sponsoring pride events, things like that, as a way to put a good face forward as like, you know, we're open, we're accepting, and more than anything, to sell products.
Some of the companies have been sponsoring Pride since the 1980s and 90s. And yeah. I wouldn't necessarily call that rainbow washing.
Yes.
Because although they did stand to make money out of gay people buying their products, the company wasn't benefiting from it reputationally in a more broad sense at that time.
Yeah. A lot of the companies that have kind of been including gay people in their advertisements, things like that, from 80s, 90s, things like that, there was a lot of backlash at the time, but now it's really not controversial so much anymore. Putting a rainbow flag on something during Pride Month was a safe bet. But really, the kind of like rainbow wash, the thing we see now with the Pride collections and everything has rainbows in it, and you go to the mall and everything, it's like Pride, 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 like every store you walk into. I wonder if it makes these companies any money, honestly, but it does make them in some ways to some people look better, I suppose.
Yeah. I guess if it lost them money, they wouldn't be. It's not necessarily for profit, but it's for like, okay, I put a rainbow thing. Can I go now?
Right.
Do I also have to make the company a queer friendly workplace? Do I have to put queer people in top level positions?
Do I have to support queer legislation or actively divest from anti-trans legislation, anti-gay legislation, which a lot of companies, they put their rainbow flag on stuff during the month of June. And then behind the scenes, who knows where their money's actually going?
Some of the companies will state that they are donating a percentage or amount of the sales of these products and to which organizations.
That's kind of like a tax break. If you're donating to a 501c3 nonprofit in the United States, that's a tax break. Like you can write that off. I feel like they do stand to profit in a lot of ways. Like it's not really out of the goodness of anyone's heart. Also, what organization is this going to? Who are they helping? Companies that have Pride collections, it's like, okay, how much of this money is going to what organization? And the thing about Pride or just like LGBTQ rights, what does that even mean? There are myriad issues that affect the queer community. It's not just one. There's so many different things.
Another necessary question to ask is, where else does the company's money go? Are they donating some of their rainbow product money to queer organizations, but also money to anti-queer organizations?
It's kind of like what happened with breast cancer awareness. After putting that pink shit on everything, where did this money go? Did we cure cancer? Absolutely not. We're not curing hate. And in fact, even though there's more rainbows on shit than ever before, it kind of feels like a lot of rights, especially now, the situation is getting worse. There just seems to be a mood in the air of a lot of hate. I walk around New York City with my partner and I'm just like, is today the day I'm going to get hate crimed? Like, which is not a thought I'd ever really had before. But especially with a lot of the anti-trans legislation, it's just like not feeling great out here to actually be a queer person that lives in the world, despite the fact that all of H&M is covered in rainbows right now. That actually isn't much of a comfort to me.
I wonder whether a lot of them are doing it just because there'll be a lot of people tweeting about it going, isn't this ridiculous?
a rainbow petrol pump or something.
That's a good point. Yeah, because it's Pride Month. They're trying to get like write-ups and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, why? You know what would be nice for your queer employees? Giving them a fucking raise. All of your employees, actually. Every single one. That would be nice. Don't waste my time and make me shill for you in some article so your company looks good. No, thank you. Wasting my time.
Some of the rainbow products that caught people's attention in recent years include rainbow mouthwash.
I want my Listerine to work. I don't care if it's gay. That actually doesn't make a difference to me.
McDonald's fries.
Classic. Classic gay fries. I actually prefer my French fries gay. I don't know about you. They taste better that way.
Rainbow Doritos. Not just rainbows on the bag. The chips themselves were different colors.
The chips were actually rainbows.
Okay, that is somewhat impressive.
But also revolting, you know. I love the Doritos. I think that's so funny. I just like, I can't even. It's I have nothing to say except that it's hilarious.
Bud Light beer in rainbow bottles and cans.
I could imagine myself if I was in the corner store buying beer and it was between, you know, the Pride collection and not. Maybe for fun, I would buy the Pride collection. Just for fun, but who knows?
Whichever has cuter packaging.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, I don't love rainbows on anything, and I try and avoid them at all costs.
Even the ones in the sky, the naturally occurring?
Those are the only ones I fuck with, period.
Bud Light has partnered with GLAAD since the 1990s, but during 2021 Pride, the Stonewall Inn refused to sell it, even though it's usually one of their top-selling drinks, and they staged a pour-out protest because Budweiser's parent company, Anheuser-Busch, had donated $35,350 to 29 anti-LGBTQ plus legislators over the previous few years. So that's an example of what we were saying earlier about where else is a company's money going. There are some quite bleak rainbow washes out there.
Something that I saw circulating this week that I truly cannot tell if this is a joke, but I did see the US Marines tweeted something and it was like a helmet with like rainbow bullets on it. I don't even know what to say to that.
The CIA, of course, managed to make it weird, posting an ominous grayscale photo of their headquarters with a Pride rainbow pathway to the entrance and the word Pride hanging heavy in the sky with the letter I made from a Progress Pride flag. Back to the funny products though, okay?
The British supermarket M&S made an LGBT sandwich, which is lettuce, guacamole, bacon and tomato.
That sounds good, actually. I would eat that.
They stopped at that point of the initialisms. They didn't go into the QIA, which is supposed to be what? Queso. What foodstuffs begin with an I?
It
gets difficult. I can see why they stopped. For the A, they got guacamole, so they used up the avocado already, maybe apple. It's starting to get disgusting the further along the initialism you get.
There has to be a law where you must continue to make the sandwich, and as the acronym grows with letters, you must find something to put in there.
For two spirit, two sausages.
Two sausages. Q, quince.
Quince? Oh, that's a classy option, Mitra.
I'm a classy lady.
I'm still struggling with the I.
I'm trying to think of I and I'm coming up short. There has to be a cheese that starts with an I. Italian sausage. Italian bread. Italian something.
Ice cream. Not a good addition. Iceberg lettuce. Well, they've already got lettuce because of the L.
They can make it work. They just got to put their heads to it.
If they really want to be supportive, they're going to have to make it work.
If they really want to put their money where their mouth is, they're going to make this sandwich work.
If they really want to change this world.
Yes.
They're going to make a very wide sandwich and a very wide bit of packaging.
M&S's LGBT sandwich was a limited edition product in 2019. Sadly, I can't see any signs of the lettuce, guacamole, bacon, tomato, quince, Italian sausage and apple sandwich being sold this year. But there's still time.
Is it worse when they don't do it? Like, is it better to have some visibility, no matter how trivialized or flippant, than none?
I know what you're saying. This is kind of like the rub a little bit, where it's like Pride initially was political, and now it's kind of morphed into capital in this weird way. It's kind of like an awareness campaign. And in some ways, I do think, particularly maybe for straight people or people inclined to hate, that kind of visibility probably is helpful in swaying some sort of public opinion. But I don't think it's getting at the root of any problems or issues. I mean, I'm not really sure. You know, I do think about it, like, is it better that we have rainbows on shit for a month so people can remember that the person next to you might be gay? Or is it just useless? I wonder who is buying the merch. I'm imagining like a landfill or something somewhere that's just like full of the discards.
Rainbow landfill. I think when it's so product focused, there are people who are not queer who will buy product and be like, that means I'm an ally. But their behavior and their life philosophy will not align with that. Like, it's easier to buy things than it is to behave in certain ways.
I think you're right. Something that I've been thinking about is when I look at a lot of Pride collections, I'm like, who is this for? Like, I know there's like some tacky gays out there who will buy anything that you put a rainbow on. No offense. but in a lot of ways, I feel like it's for straight people, or maybe, I cannot speak for all gays. We are not a monolith. I'm just one gay here saying that I think there are better ways to help and uplift queer communities.
Yeah, or better places to put your money.
Yeah, like donating directly to organizations that you know are actually doing work. Organizations that help directly with like the most vulnerable of the queer population. And that's really where you should be putting your money. The people who are at the most vulnerable.
And organizations that are working all year round.
All year round, not just the month of June. I mean, this is the thing I wonder. It's like, what could a corporation possibly do that could be helpful to real people? Corporations, corporate jobs, corporate stuff, that's not the revolution. That's nice that you said these words, but at the end of the day, like, how do you treat your workers? What do they think about you? I really feel like as a corporation, the only thing you can do to help people is pay them more money and let your workers unionize. Truly, that's it.
I think the reason why it's not the revolution is because they actively don't want the revolution. They're like, I've done this. Can we just carry on now as I was?
Right. They're not actually interested in the revolution because the revolution is not helpful to them making money, you know? And at the end of the day, all of this is about, you know, putting rainbow flags. It's about making money. It's just about money. It's part of the same problem where it's like, we can kind of put this face forward, but at the end of the day, we still have to reckon with our actions and how we treat people.
It's a lot easier just to buy some rainbow Doritos, Mitra.
Delicious. Salty treat.
I think a lot of people have concerns about performative allyship. I think where a lot of people go wrong is because they don't know what to do, and then either they don't do anything useful or they do something that is not useful at all.
Yeah. I mean, queer people are not a monolith, especially if you spend 2 seconds on the internet. One person is going to be like, do this, and someone else is going to be like, definitely don't do that. There's no right answer. If we could just all stop performing and start living, that would be that'd be great.
Mitra Kaboli is an audio maker and the host of the new podcast Welcome to Provincetown, about all of the characters in Provincetown one summer. Go to your podcatchers and subscribe. Sarah Shulman is a writer of non-fiction books including Conflict Is Not Abuse and Let the Record Show, and novels such as After Dolores and Maggie Terry, a detective story I just absolutely ripped through. The Illusionist is an independent podcast that loves to collaborate with SAME, I'm pleased to say that the aforementioned live tour of Australia is being organised by Izzy Roberts Orr of Broadwave. Broadwave is a collective that makes beautiful podcasts like Tender and A Fluorescent Feeling. So check those out in the pod places and at broadwavepods.com. And if you want to support the making of this show, then go to theillusionist.org/donate, where if you sign up to patronise The Illusionist, you get behind-the-scenes intel, fortnightly live streams with me and the dictionaries, and 24/7 access to the Illusiverse Discord community, where this week we've been having a discussion about some topics I'd like to cover, such as how frequently someone can say your given name before it gets weird. Join us, theillusionist.org/donate. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is autotelic, adjective of an activity or creative work having an end or purpose in itself. Try using autotelic in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, thanks to Benjamin Riskin of Roomtone.fm. Illusionist music is by Martin Austwick of PaleBirdMusic.com and the podcast Neutrino Watch. Our ad partner is Multitude. To sponsor an episode of the show, contact them at multitude.productions/ads. Find me at Illusionist Show on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, and head to the show's website for a playlist of the Pride-relevant episodes that I've made over the years, some of the very best episodes of the show at any time of year, I think. Check out the changing use of the word bisexual, the secret gay language Polari, the linguistic evolution of the word queer, and the choice of the word pride for pride, and many more. Also on the website, you'll find every episode of the show in audio and transcript form, plus the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words and listings for live events. That is all at the show's forever home, theillusionist.org.